It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As is the case just about every week, it is me, your host, Matt Collins, and I am joined once again by Brian Joyner, who last weekend not only got to live the misery with the rest of us vis-a-vis the Red Sox horrible weekend against the Yankees, but he also got to live in person through just a slog of a game at Gillette for the Patriots. So, Brian, how are you? How are you recovering from just an atrocious weekend?
Well, fortunately, going into the Patriots game, one might say I was well lubricated to to be able to survive such a miserable experience. And I mean, on the drive up, we were listening to the game, and literally the second we were pulling into our hotel was the Stanton homer. So the game, it's, as I said, my brother brought his friend from Serbia who had never been to a American football game. And I told him right when we got in, the worst part will be the game. And that was before I saw the game. So I was right about that. The rest was great, but not the best weekend.
No, it does not seem like that. And we will we'll let people go to Pat's pulpit for the Patriots talk, because I have not much else to say about that game that I barely watched. But I do feel like it is probably prudent to relive some of the Red Sox weekend, as I'm pretty much positive, you know, if you're listening to this, Red Sox got swept by the Yankees at home over the weekend. We talked about it last week. We've been talking about it a little bit leading up to the series. The way things shook out, they just had to not get swept and everything would be good. They'd have pretty much they'd have no trouble making it to the wild card game as long as they took one of those games. They did not take one of those games. We'll talk about it a little bit later. They still have a pretty decent road to the wild card game, but they made things much harder on themselves and they put us through a lot of misery. And I just wanted to go through some of the stuff from that weekend. Some of it just venting, some of it maybe some implications for the rest of the season and maybe beyond. And we'll start with the first game. Really, the story there to me was Nathan Eovaldi. Nathan Eovaldi has been obviously their best starting pitcher all season. Huge matchup against Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole looked very much like himself for most of the game. Nate Eovaldi very much did not. His secondaries were awful. The Yankees were on everything. He did not record a single strikeout his whole start. I believe that's the first time in his career that's happened. Didn't make it out of the third. Gave up 7 innings. Walked 2. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk, including here. We talked about it a little bit the last couple of weeks about a potential wild card game start and Eovaldi versus Chris Sale and Evaldi had been sort of taking that lead, with Sale kind of looking a little bit shakier since his return from the COVID list. Does this start where Evaldi just got hit around and the Yankees clearly weren't fooled by anything? Is that any extra concern for a potential wildcard game start? And does it move the needle in terms of how you're thinking about that decision between him and Sale, if they get a chance to make that decision, which is no guarantee?
Well, obviously, it does not help them get in a position to make the decision. I'm inclined to just say, still let him rip. I mean, he had been so good against the Yankees, and then just it all went to poop. And it's just hard to feel good about anything right now. And I just don't know. I think it's going to be... We'll see. I believe you did the math, and they have to win 4 games to clinch a tie and 5 games to be in no matter what. I think that's what you said. But
yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I'm not planning more than a day ahead at this point anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what makes the most sense. I will say in Evaldi's favor, a couple of points. The first is just, it was just a weird start. Evaldi has kind of been a different guy than what we've gotten used to over the last, probably over the second half. Especially he's been more of a strikeout pitcher than he's been over his career. And it hasn't really been because of the fastball. He's been doing a good job of mixing all of his secondaries. He's a 5-pitch pitcher when he's at his best, and being able to throw any of those at any count just keeps everybody off balance. But on Friday, his splitter, he threw a couple of really bad ones the first inning, clearly had no feel for it, only threw one the rest of the way. His curveball was awful all night. So when he doesn't have 2 of his secondaries, I mean, it's just clearly not going to work, especially against a lineup like the Yankees. We just haven't seen that happen, and I don't think that's something that you should like expect from Evaldi going forward, him just not having a secondary. So that just happens sometimes to pitchers. And the other good thing is he has not really strung together 2 bad outings in a row. He hasn't been the kind of guy this year that's going to let one bad outing trip him up. I think he's had like twice this season he's allowed at least 3 runs in 2 consecutive starts. So it was obviously a bad night. It was not fun to watch. It started off what was a big sweep. All of those things are true. But as far as going forward, I don't think it really changes much for me. And I still think, as we kind of talked about last week, I still think it's if they get the chance to make that decision, which again, I think is probably far-fetched at this point. But if they did get that chance, I think it comes down more to Sale than Evaldi. I think Evaldi kind of is what he is. And they have at least one more start from Sale, and I guess I should mention, like we do every week, this is being recorded Tuesday afternoon, so we haven't seen Tuesday night's game yet, and Sale is scheduled to make that start. So he'll make that start. He could make one more before the end of the season as well on the last day of the season. So, but if he starts well tonight and then they get to clinch it, I think that could swing it. But as far as Evaldi goes, it was just a bad night, and it happens.
Yeah, I'm way more worried about what happens if anybody but either of those guys has to pitch in that game.
I don't think that's really a possibility, just because, I mean, Evaldi's scheduled to start on Wednesday, and they really... there shouldn't be a scenario where he's going to pitch again. I guess he could pitch out of the bullpen in that last game of the season if they really need it. Or if they had a tiebreaker on Monday, he would start that game. And then obviously if they won, neither of them would be available for the wildcard game. So I guess there are some scenarios, but more than likely they'll at least have Evaldi fully rested, which makes me feel at least a little bit better about a potential wildcard game.
Oh, I mean it all though, like ever at any point in the game.
Wait, what? Sorry, you lost me.
What I mean is that if Sale and Evaldi are both available for the game, if they don't pitch all 9 innings, the fact that somebody else is going to have to pitch, maybe. That's what concerns me more than anything.
Oh, yeah, that is a fair concern. We're going to get to the to the bullpen in a minute, because that was really the disaster of the series. And Friday night was just kind of your typical run-of-the-mill loss. I think they fell behind early and they mounted a little bit of a comeback, but it never really felt like they were back in the game. It was just one of those days. The other two games were much more frustrating, where they blew late leads. But before we get to the bullpen, I think it's sort of flown under the radar that the offense was just not good this entire series. I mean, it's one thing to get shut down by Gerrit Cole. Everybody gets shut down by Gerrit Cole. He's the second best pitcher on planet Earth, and I mean, that's just how it works. But then they're facing, I mean, Nestor Cortez and Jordan Montgomery are fine pitchers. They're going to be in pretty much everyone's rotation, and they're certainly not guys that you expect to beat up on, but at the same time, you expect to get something going from your offense. The best hitters in the Red Sox order, they've been really hot and cold all season, and we've seen that when they aren't hitting, there's not much else that can be done. And Bogarts, Devers, Martinez, and Schwarber, they went 9-41 over the course of the series. They just were a non-factor. I mean, I think to me that was the big reason why they lost. They got swept. It was why the bullpen was in a position to blow those games. And I mean, I think that's, I don't know if it would, I would say that's my biggest concern, but it does worry me that their core hitters have gone so cold, and it seems like when one goes cold, they all go cold at the same time, and it does kind of concern me that could pretty easily happen in a wild card game playoff series situation. For a team built around their lineup, it has not always looked very good.
Yeah, I wrote a column last week about how the hitters would carry them, and they did the opposite of that. I mean, they proved it in negative. Though, I will say, especially with Saturday's game, if Aaron Judge isn't 40 feet tall, maybe Bobby Dalbec gets a home run and everything's different after that. But yeah, I mean, the core hitters have to hit if this team's going to win. And that is something that happened in every Red Sox World Series winning run, is that the guys were just on one, no more so than Poppy in 2013. But it's, look, we're feeling down, but they have a really meaty slate of games this week. And with the Blue Jays playing the Yankees, maybe this will be get right for the offense and they can come into, hopefully, a wild card game that they're in with the bats having woken up. But yeah, that was just a terrible weekend. Terrible weekend all around.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about the opponents and getting it back on track, I mean, that's especially the Orioles. I mean, the Orioles lineup, I think, is better than people realize. It's not a good lineup outside of Cedric Mullins. They don't really have a ton of, like, star-level talent, but they have a lot of, like, league average to decently above average hitters in that lineup, but their pitching is just atrocious, and they're facing three lefties this week against the Orioles, who all have essentially the same pitch mix. So if that's not an opportunity to get back on track, I don't know what it is, especially for guys like Bogarts and Martinez, who should really be teeing off on these lefties. Yeah, so we hinted at the bullpen a little bit, especially in those last two games. I mean, the bullpen just did not come through, and there were some extenuating circumstances between manager decisions and umpiring and defense, and we'll get to all that with the specific circumstances of these blown games. But just generally, it felt like, and I mean, everybody was talking about this on the old Twitter machine, you just felt how much Garrett Whitlock was missed. And I think we talked about it last week, and we both kind of felt like, yeah, it's not great, but they can get by. And then, I mean, this weekend just kind of threw that right back in our face. I mean, both of the eighth innings where they blew the games on Saturday and Sunday would have been spots where Garrett Whitlock was probably in the game, and he's probably not. I mean, their biggest issue this weekend was just walking everybody, walking guys in front of Aaron Judge, walking the nine hitter. It was just awful control in big spots, and Whitlock was clearly missed. I mean, I guess you can look at it one of two ways. You can feel good because they should have Whitlock back for a potential wild card game, and then that obviously changes the way that they'll handle the late innings, and hopefully we don't have to see Darwin's and Hernandez go up against Giancarlo Stanton, things like that. Or you can look at it and say, if they're this bad, if things go this bad with just one reliever down, I mean, that obviously doesn't speak well about this bullpen, and it's hard to have confidence in this team in the late innings. I mean, are you... I guess I don't really know what my question is here, but I mean, is when it seemed like the bullpen was turning around, and like we had said last week, it seemed like they could weather the Whitlock-less storm. Was that just facing bad competition in hindsight? Was that, what, did we just get fooled?
I mean, it all just, it comes down to Tanner Houck, because we said that they're sort of similarly able, one would think, to go as a starter or reliever, be flexible. And he blew it. I mean, there's no other way to say it. He blew it. And it's going to happen sometimes, but it would have been Whitlock in that situation. So the fact that they might get another chance at it with Whitlock in there is helpful. And Tanner Houck is really young. These things happen. But man, that was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't put as much of it on Houck as you do, although, I mean, the walk, I believe it was a two-out walk to Brett Gardner, if I'm remembering things correctly. The whole weekend's kind of jumbling around my brain, but I mean, that was awful. You can't have that. That was right in front of Aaron Judge. Yeah, that's what happened. It was a two-out walk to Brett Gardner, and then he walked Aaron Judge, which I can understand. Everybody walks Aaron Judge. But to me, I mean, the swing moment of this game, and this is where I just truly lost my mind, bringing Darwin's and Hernandez in, Yankees had two on, two out, Anthony Rizzo coming up. I get wanting the lefty-lefty matchup, but Rizzo is a guy who he's not going to chase pitches out of the zone. He's gonna make a good amount of contact. I mean, that's just not, he's also not that bad against lefties. It just seems like the worst possible time to use Darwin's and Hernandez, especially with Giancarlo Stanton coming up next. And I mean, I said it even before Rizzo's at bat started, I said there's a pretty good chance that he's gonna walk him, and then Giancarlo Stanton comes up with the bases loaded, and that's just scary. And obviously we know what happens. Stanton hits a grand slam to the moon, and that was that. I mean, are you with me, or am I overreacting on how badly I think Cora botched that decision? I mean, it sounds like, I guess, you are putting more of it on Tanner Houck, and I think I'm putting more of it on the manager, which, I mean, typically the person putting it on the player rather than the manager isn't the right, but I don't know. I was just, I was very disheartened by that decision and thought it was awful managing, and I was curious where you came down on that.
No, I think it's a chicken and the egg situation. I mean, well, like, Tanner Houck is the egg, and Alex Cora is the chicken. Because Tanner Houck created the thing that grew into a real-life nightmare. But the decision is even worse than you were talking about. Because, as noted, I was in the car on the way to Foxborough, and they noted correctly that suppose Rizzo was bad against lefties, they had Luke Voit on the bench. And he could have just come in and done Luke Voit things. And then, yeah, I mean, baseball can be very slapstick sometimes. Like, first pitch home runs against questionable reliever choices, especially grand slams. And it's like, that is one of just the absolute moonshots I think I've ever seen to that part of the park in Fenway. And, I hate that he's on the Yankees because it's so cool, but it never, I mean, they said on the radio, and this is true, this is where the three batter rule just kills you, and you know it going in. So it's not like they sprung it on him after Rizzo, but I agree that it is equally bad as what Houck did. I mean, but I think that this is a case where two people could have blown it. I think they both blew it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely right. And I mean, Hernandez blew it too. He he could have simply thrown strikes to Anthony Rizzo, and maybe Rizzo gets a hit, and that's the way the Red Sox lose instead. But, I mean, I've written this a few times since it happened. I would much rather at least make the other team beat you, obviously, than walk him. Or I guess technically he hit him with a pitch, but it was on ball four anyways. But, so yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of people involved, and I hadn't even... I had kind of forgotten about Luke Voit in that possibility, and that just makes me even more bad. Although we should mention that Josh Taylor was hurt, and he hadn't been placed on the injured list yet, but he was the following morning, and he seemed like the guy who made the most sense to bring in, and he wasn't an option. But there's still Austin Davis, and there's Leaving Helkin, and I mean, there's other ways to go. But what is done is done.
Well, the thing is that I could go over to Cora being totally like Umbrella more at fault, because also we talked about how, and I'll just be brief, the COVID outbreak and all the follow-up stuff, these are things that leaders of people maybe could have avoided, maybe they couldn't have, and this is like trying to prove a negative. But just while it's not exactly point A to B, a lack of leadership in this scenario is another reason potentially why Taylor wasn't there to begin with. So it was just a cluster in every sense, and it was ended very, very badly.
Yeah, it did end very badly, as did Sunday's game, where, I mean, this was the game where I truly lost my mind, and you screenshotted, thank you for that, you screenshotted my night on the internet watching Sunday's game unfold. I mean, I totally melted down, and I'm not ashamed of it. The eighth inning was just, or the bottom of the seventh and top of the eighth was just a tour de force of the worst baseball you've ever seen, and from both sides. I mean, the Red Sox were able to pull out in front because the Yankees forgot how to catch pop-ups on a couple plays in a row, which was obviously fortunate. And then on the other side, the Red Sox again got into some trouble with walks. Adam Ottavino, I can never say his name right. Adam Ottavino issued a couple of walks, I believe, to start his inning. Yeah, two walks to start the inning, and then a double. Sorry, that was Garrett Richards, not Ottavino. But yeah, so Ottavino came in, two men in scoring position, one out, and all hell broke loose. I guess we'll start, I have it written backwards on our little rundown thing, but we'll go with what happened first, and that was a pop-up and foul ground, first base side. There was room for Dahlbeck to not only catch it, but actually get under it. It landed on the field, but he... We saw it twice this weekend. We've seen it a few times all season. He gets tentative when he's approaching the dugout or he's approaching the wall. And the first one, I believe it was also on Saturday, and a bald eagle just flew outside my window, which is interesting. We saw the first one, I believe, on Sunday earlier in the game. Maybe it was Saturday. And that was on the dugout steps, and I can kind of understand more being tentative there. But the second one on Sunday with Judge at the plate, he was just going near the wall, and he tiptoed and kind of held up and tried to reach out and catch it, didn't come far enough. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't really know what the question is, and I know you don't have the answer, but I just, like, what is going on there? There's got to be some sort of mental block, and somebody on the Red Sox needs to figure that out, because you can't have a first baseman who's not going to get near the wall on a foul ball, because it's, I mean, we saw it, it's costly.
I believe Chaim Bloom would disagree with you on that. I mean, it's worth remembering that Bobby Dahlbeck, that by virtue of being a passable third baseman, is a passable first baseman. But he's still a third baseman. He's not a first baseman. I know it's a weirdly specialized skill set, but, I mean, for every reason possible, we were wondering if they were going to upgrade at first base. And they kind of did, but not really in this department either. It's just, I mean, I don't know. He's just young. He's young. That, I don't know what to tell you. He's making mistakes.
Well, so, I mean, I do think I think overall, defensively, he's gotten, I think, markedly better as the season's gone on. It's just this one strange thing, and I don't think you can even chalk it up to being new at first base because, I mean, this happens at third base, too. You get foul balls at third base. It's just on the other side of the diamond, and I guess maybe your glove is on that side, and maybe that makes it a little different. I don't know. I feel like I would like somebody to figure this out, and it's not going to be me, but I feel like at some point, whether it be in college or in the minors, I don't remember it happening in the majors. He must have, like, flipped over a wall or, like, fell down dugout steps or something. I mean, it looks like it's a mental thing where he gets near. I mean, it's like when a pitcher gets hit with a line drive and then they're kind of flinching anytime a ball, somebody makes contact and it's coming back towards them. It's sort of a mental block that you need to get over. That's the only thing I can think of with Dahlbeck there. And again, I know you're not going to have the answers, but I said part of this was venting and this is part of the venting.
Yeah, I mean, if I had the answers, that'd be worth a lot of money. Like, that'd be just like, hey, Bobby, let's do it. Though I don't suppose he makes a lot of money yet. Anyhow, it's a bummer.
And, yeah, speaking of bummers and venting, where I really, truly lost my mind was with Joe West immediately after Dahlbeck let that foul ball drop in. Ottavino struck out Aaron Judge, full stop. Judge tipped the ball into Vasquez's glove. Vasquez caught it, and then when he was transferring the ball back into his hand, he dropped it, and they ruled it as a dropped foul tip, so the at-bat kept going, and replay showed that that was clearly the wrong call. The good news, I guess, is that Joe West is done after the season. They were talking about that all weekend. He is retiring after the season. And earlier in the day, Pete Abraham had tweeted something about how Joe West has always been a good umpire. So I think we should have known at that point that he was going to make some sort of awful call. But I mean, to be honest, I'm not even most mad at Joe West, I don't think. I mean, his angle from where he's standing, I think it's probably hard to tell that he was transferring there, but it's again I don't even really know that I have a question, but like the fact that they have replay and they're just sometimes you can use it and sometimes you can't, I mean, that I guess I understand that it's sort of a judgment call and you probably want to avoid replay on judgment calls, but I don't know, I mean, something that obvious that changed the game as much as it did, because Judge ended up hitting a double after that, and then Stanton hit another home run, and I mean, everything kind of went awry after that. But I mean, the fact that you can't review these obvious mistakes, just, it really drives me nuts.
The fact that you were more loopy after what I had done all day before and after that Patriots game speaks to the level of insanity at play here. But the NFL here is a place that has done a really, this year, they finally, and this is the future of replay, it makes the most sense. They literally just preemptively now, if it's an obvious call and they know where it's headed to replay, and they just tell them. So they fix it on the field when it's egregious. And it's so great because the moment passes in an instant because you're like, well, obviously that's wrong. And yes, it's very frustrating to have replay and not be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I have so many issues with baseball's replay system, and this is just one of them. And again, like we were sort of talking about earlier, it's easy to put this on Dahlbeck for letting that foul ball drop in. It's easy to put it on Joe West and the umpiring system for getting that strikeout call wrong. But also, Adam Ottavino gave up a laser of a double right after that, like I said. Gave the Yankees a lead and then kind of ended the game right after that by giving up another moonshot to Stanton. So as much as I'd like to lay the blame entirely on the feet of other things, Ottavino was awful in his outing, and I mean that's just part of it. Like we were saying before, the bullpen is scary right now.
Okay, so as you were talking, I've developed an umbrella theory, which is a silly theory, it's not real, but where did Ottavino come from? I think we know where he came from. Where did Whitlock, who's mysteriously absent, where did he come from? I know he's not mysteriously absent. Eovaldi, See what I'm saying here? Conspiracy.
It's the long con. I think you broke this one. Broke it wide open. Okay, yeah, so that's enough reliving the weekend.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The good news, as we've alluded to a few times, despite how bad this weekend is, despite the fact that they got swept by one of their main competitors for a playoff spot, Red Sox still looking good for their playoff odds. Fangraphs still has them, I believe, opening up right now. Yeah, Fangraphs still has them as a higher playoff odds than the Yankees, which is a little interesting given where the Yankees stand. And just as a side note, because I'm just noticing this, the Yankees actually have the highest probability of winning the World Series in the division, including over the Rays. Seems insane to me, but that, I suppose, is a topic for another day. But anyways, the Red Sox, yeah, they have a pretty solid chance of getting in. Like Brian was saying before, just doing the math out a little bit, the Red Sox really just need to win 4 games and they'll be good. They'll at least have a tiebreaker on Monday, and that's if the worst case scenario otherwise happens. They are helped tremendously by the fact that the Yankees and Blue Jays play each other. So no matter what, as long as the Red Sox take 2 out of 3 against the Orioles here starting Tuesday, running through Thursday, they'll gain at least 1 game on either the Yankees or the Blue Jays. If the Red Sox win 5 of their last 6, they are guaranteed a playoff spot with no tiebreakers or anything. And they are playing the Orioles for 3, and then they're playing the Nationals for 3. And the Nationals have been one of the worst teams in baseball since the deadline. They kind of stripped things down at the deadline, and now they're just Juan Soto and everybody else at this point. I mean, it shouldn't be much of a challenge for the Red Sox to get it done. And if they can't win 4 out of 6 against the Orioles and Nationals, it feels like that's their fault, no matter what anybody else does.
You know, Juan Soto right now reminds me of A-Rod in Texas. Just these like absolutely categorically insane numbers just into the void, even more so than Trout, because that's just like the Angels thing. And it's like, it's incredible how much they've steered into it. But at least we get to see Soto. I hope he does. He's probably going to walk 15 times and the Nationals will lose each game by 5 runs.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no reason for Juan Soto to see a strike at any point in that series. The Red Sox would be playing with fire to give him anything to hit. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the Red Sox, they more or less control their own destiny. If they win 2 series against bad teams, they're at least in a tiebreaker. And, I mean, there's valid consternation about their ability or lack thereof to be a good team, but they have the 5th best record in baseball against teams with losing records this season, and that's what they have the rest of the way. So they just need to basically do what they've done all season, and then it's whatever happens after that happens. And we got a question along those lines from Rob Manfraud. Get it? Rob Manfraud says, since July 29th, the Red Sox are 6-21 against teams with a positive run differential. If they win the wild card game, can they be expected to play competitive baseball in a series against a true World Series contender like the Rays?
Hell yeah. If they hit, they could beat anybody. Like, that's... they're not... we forget, and we have forgotten because it's been patchy. But if they are all hitting, they can beat anybody. So yes, absolutely they can. They just got to make it. That's the hard. It's attrition. They got to make it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably not, my answer probably wouldn't have been as maybe enthusiastic as I think yours was, but look, I mean, they're going to be, if they do win the wild card game and they do go on to play the Rays, and I think the Rays have clinched the top seed in the AL. If they haven't yet, then, I mean, they're going to. Whoever wins the wild card game will play Tampa Bay. The Red Sox are obviously going to be underdogs. I mean, they're going to be underdogs no matter who they play. They should be, and that's fine. I mean, I don't know. I guess I can't be too angry if they lose to the Rays. The Rays are just, and I was a little bit lower on the Rays than I should have been coming into the year. They're clearly the better team than the Red Sox. And like you said, that's not to say the Red Sox can't win. It's playoff baseball. Strange things happen. The Red Sox have a great lineup. They have Chris Sale. They have Nathan Eovaldi. I mean, much crazier things have happened. But they will be underdogs. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, which makes it more fun if they win and less disappointing if they lose. It's kind of a dream scenario. You just got to get there. If you don't make it, somebody I know, he runs a he's the manager of a local sports blog, said he doesn't want anyone talking about 2011 this week. So let's not talk about that.
Well, that was not in reference to the Red Sox. That was just in reference to talking about it in general, because it's the 10th anniversary, so every baseball website has some sort of article reliving that day, and I just am not a fan. But no, I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody actually
this year. They might reverse it. Let's do the opposite. Let's be the team that makes it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would prefer to just not have to care about anything on the last day of the season. I think that would be the best case scenario, but sure, I'll be down for them being on the other side of a 2011 type deal. All right, a few other things I wanted to get to before we close this one out. We haven't talked a whole lot about the playoff roster, and really I don't think there's a ton of mystery there. I mean, their roster essentially is what it is at this point. I guess the only real question is if Whitlock and Taylor will be healthy enough by that point, and more importantly Whitlock, and I think every expectation is that he will be. I think the one maybe interesting question would be regarding Jose Iglesias's roster spot. Iglesias is not eligible for the postseason because he was acquired in September. What do you think they do with that spot? Are they gonna bring up another bat, speed guy? I mean, I think Jaron Duran would obviously fit that role, or do you think they keep an extra pitcher on the roster?
Doubt they're gonna change horses in midstream here. I mean, I think they're probably gonna do a pitcher. I have said all along that this is one of the situational baseball is a great place to have Duran, so I would love them to do that. That to me would show a flexibility that they've been lacking this year, and you get to see now whether that is just the ethos of the team or that was a regular season thing. See how it's just, this team seems pretty stubborn. So I would guess they've done what they've done all year.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it's going to be Duran. I would be surprised if it wasn't Duran. I mean, this is just part of how playoff baseball works. The speedsters get their spot. We saw, I mean, Terrence Gore was on like three straight pennant winning teams or something like that, and his whole deal was just staying in AAA until the playoffs, and then he would come up and be the speed guy. I think, especially with the rotation shortening in the playoffs, and you're not really using as many relievers. I mean, you don't need to use Martin Perez. Martin Perez probably shouldn't even be on the roster. You don't need to use all these guys. I think it'll be Duran. I think that speed element is something that they're certainly missing. And yeah, I think I would be surprised if it wasn't Duran.
Good. I hope you're right.
Me too. All right, I had a couple of early off-season questions, just because there's not a whole lot else to talk about. And obviously we'll have more time to think about the stuff after the season, but just some stuff that's been creeping up now. Starting with the DH / left field. Can Schwarber and Martinez work on the same roster? Is there, like, do you see a viable way that would be able to work having both of them come back next season?
Is Schwarber already coming back?
Schwarber has a mutual option, which essentially means that he will be a free agent.
Yeah, then I just think he becomes just like every other player, and if the price is right, they'll do it. I mean, the trade price was obviously right, and that was the seemed to be the defining factor in why they got him. So I think they're way more about you just identify what you want, and then you wait for the price to be right, and you strike. So I don't think that they would be... I think it kind of has nothing to do with even how he plays. I think it's just about how much he costs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely part of it, but I think, I don't know, I see everybody calling to bring Schwarber back, and I certainly would not complain. I think he is obviously a great hitter, and I like watching him hit. I mean, I think you have to be comfortable playing him in left field every day, which, A, probably means that you're trading one of Verdugo or Renfro, which, again, I can live with it. And it also... I think it mostly means that you're going to have to be dealing with Schwarber or Martinez in the field every day. I don't know that that's a great plan, honestly. I think I could probably talk myself into it, though. Just with the idea that you're trading... I mean, I don't think it works without trading one of Verdugo and Renfro. So I suppose it depends what you could get for one of those guys. And I think if you could get a good starting pitcher for one of them and then roll with the other one, Schwarber and Hernandez / Duran, in the outfield, I think I could probably live with that. But I don't know, I think people clamoring for Schwarber to come back should probably think about the fit a little bit more, because it's still a little wonky.
I think they just want him to be good now, so they're just imagining him being good of like, oh man, that would be awesome, so let's do it next year. But I agree with you. Like, I think it would only happen if the pieces fit together in the way you described at the end there, in just such a way that it made sense. But I don't need it. I think it's fine. I mean, if this year proved anything, you could just go get someone like him again at $3.59 on the day of the trade deadline.
Yeah. And the other off-season question that I think people have been talking about a little bit more is Christian Vasquez. Christian Vasquez has a team option for next season. He has not been great this year. He's been a little hot and cold. Do you think they should, and do you think they will bring him back? Just an early prediction.
I don't have a prediction, but it does seem like there's an actual, you know, up until this year, for years, he's sort of been the heartbeat of the team in a way. And it does not feel like that is the case right now. And it seems like there's some not great feelings. I'm just basing this on comments that stuff he said. And I just no longer think it's absolutely going to happen. I think it's possible that it doesn't. I really don't know. I look at the team and I am like sort of a mercenary operation. So we'll see what the money comes down to.
Yeah. And I mean, just in terms of the comments, I don't know, you probably missed it because you were gone all weekend, but I think somebody did actually ask him about it this weekend, and he did say he would like to stay. I don't really necessarily put a whole lot into comments like that, because what else are you going to say when a reporter asks you that question? But I don't think there's any hard feelings. I think it's more just about the player, and I'll be honest, I've been extremely disappointed in Christian Vasquez, the hitter this year. I was very high on him coming in. I had totally bought into the last 2 years. And he's just not hitting the ball hard at all this year. And he is back to just being a glove first catcher. But the thing is, it's so hard to find catching. His option, I believe, is for $7 million next year. I think that's a price where you can just live with it. I think in an ideal world, they probably would have liked to feel more confident that they can lean on Connor Wong and maybe bring in a veteran backup with him and be able to roll with that. But I don't think Connor Wong has done enough this year. He's been okay, but he hasn't been, like, great. So I kind of feel like the easy road is just bring back Vasquez for another year and then probably figure something else out after that. But I do think that'll be one of the most interesting storylines of the season or off season.
You sort of sold me there on a bridge year to, like, implicitly to work on it. I thought I had seen something about him talking about, not be there being friction, but just talking about struggling and acknowledging that things were kind of weird. And, you know, that is the one thing about Vasquez is that he's like the drummer. He's like, seems like he was the drummer of the team. I'm just not feeling that right now. And I suspect he could get it back, but I do agree with you, though, that such as if he wants to be back, and we could take those comments at face value, but or just put them to the side. But he's, you know, it'd just be very status quo in a good way, I think, for a team that is sort of just slow building. It's not going to set them back to bring him back. And, you know, maybe he pops back into all-star type Christian Vasquez form. I doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, any other position I would probably feel differently, but I mean, it's so much easier said than done to find a catcher. I mean, it's easier to say I want to find somebody better than Christian Vasquez, but I don't know who that is and what you're paying to get him and all that. All right, last thing before we go, and the last time we do this, because next Tuesday is the wild card game. How are things going to shake out? Who are the two wildcard teams? Who is hosting? What do you got?
Going to be very boring and say the Yankees and Red Sox.
Who's where?
We're definitely in New York. Imho. If the Yankees make it, they're going to have to beat Toronto. If they beat Toronto, I mean, yeah, it just puts wins on the board. So I'll take the Yankees.
I'm going to go, and this is probably more because it's what I want to see or what I prefer to see. I'm going to go Blue Jays coming to Fenway. I think the Blue Jays are going to take at least 2 out of 3 this weekend, and then they play the Orioles last, where the Yankees have to play the Rays. And while the Rays already clinched, they have enough depth where I think that's still a scary matchup, even if they're playing some backups. So I'm gonna go Red Sox. Red Sox hosting the Blue Jays next Tuesday.
Yeah, certainly that would kick ass, at least until the game began, and then became terrifying. But
be much more palatable to lose to Toronto than New York. All right, that is going to do it for today's show. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. If you did, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If it is applicable, please leave a rating and a review. That is supposed to be helpful. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Brian is at Brian Joyner. Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. And you can read all of our writing at overthemonster.com. And yeah, we'll be back. I don't know if we'll be back. Us two specifically will be back next week, but there will be something for your earballs next week.